Bienvenue to the Two Chance Podcast, a show dedicated to the belief that you can never have too many bikes in the garage and it's always a good day for a ride. And now, here are the Two Chance.
Welcome to the Two Johns podcast. I am John, and this will be an interview-only episode of the Two Johns podcast with our regular banter resuming in the near future. But this time I had the opportunity to sit down with Jamie Carney and talk about the, in this time of limited racing, talk about how this affects his, as the head coach of the cycling program at Piedmont College in Northern Georgia. And I hope you enjoy this. And this interview is brought to you by Gulo Composites. If you're interested, go to their website. And if you choose to buy a set of wheels, you can type in 2Johns10 in the discount code section on the web store. That's TWOJOHNS10, the numeral 10, and you will get a 10% discount. Also, still follow us on Twitter. You can email us at 2johnspodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook, and we appreciate your contributions on Patreon. Helps us with our podcast hosting as well as some equipment. So I hope you enjoy this.
Interview.
I'd like to welcome Jamie Carney to the Two Johns podcast. Jamie is a multi-time Olympian. He holds 22 U.S. national titles on the track, and the reason why I've got him on the podcast today is he is the head cycling coach of the Piedmont Lions of Habersham County in Northern Georgia. Jamie, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Yeah, and I, you know, one of the things I was thinking about is, you know, when you go and study at university, you have all these, you have your professors, but how many of your professors have been to the academic equivalent of the Olympics twice, you know, and they can tell you about this thing that they know about. So, you know, I think it's great that Piedmont's got you developing riders. And I just have a couple questions about, you know, what would bring a student athlete to Piedmont to ride? Like, how do you get your riders? How do you build your team?
The number one way we're trying to build our team is through our reputation. And different schools will offer different things. Some will have full ride scholarships. Some are in areas like Durango or Brevard where they're worldly known for their mountain biking, what have you. But we have a program that offers a ton of support, and not just through collegiate racing. Like, we're going to be doing Fool's Gold in 2 weeks, do a bunch of events that are not collegiate events. And those are typically very expensive events where collegiate racing is pretty cheap and inexpensive, but a lot of times it's not the greatest experience. So we search out events all the time and we go to them all the time. So that's the big difference between Piedmont and most other schools, is we are racing about 3 out of every 4 weekends all year round, not just during the school year. We'll send kids to Tour of American Steerland or Tulsa. We'll do Southern Cross. We'll do whatever we want to do. And the kids have an opportunity to engage in different disciplines they've never done before. Like, we have a bunch of bikes. We have fleets of bikes. If you've never ridden the track before, we have track bike for you. If you've never done cross before, we have a cross bike for you. It's a full experience. So coming to Piedmont, you get the experience, the weather, and the terrain. And it's a good school, too.
Yeah, so, well, that's pretty interesting. So you're not doing just the collegiate races. You're, as the coach, you're putting the program together and you're saying, all right, hey, Southern Cross is going on. Let's do that. I know it's not a collegiate race, but this is going to be a great experience for you.
Yeah, that's the number one thing we do. I mean, realistically, collegiate nationals is a lot of fun, but there's so many events out there, and getting these kids hooked on cycling and getting into it is my primary goal. And so yeah, whenever we have something that's near to us, within, you know, we'll drive 4 hours to an event, but we're, you know, when it's above 4 hours, it's kind of hard to get them not to miss classes. And that's another thing I do is we have multiple rides a day. Nothing's mandatory. You don't have to miss any classes with me. We wait for you to get out of class and then we'll drive. That means I'm driving through the middle of the night. That's what we're doing. So school comes first, but I'll give you the biggest experience I possibly can. You know, we race a lot. COVID's gotten in the way, but we're still in on campus and we're happy and the kids are doing the right things.
Yeah, so safety on campuses is obviously a big subject right now, especially as everybody's showing back up to school. So you're saying Piedmont is in full classes. You were mentioning that there's some technology. Like, how are they controlling this or at least monitoring?
Well, the rules were mask full-time. So basically, if you can't be 6 feet apart, you have to wear a mask. In classes, you have to wear a mask. If you don't, you will be taken away. There's no excuses. I mean, everyone's bought in. There hasn't been any protests or instances where people haven't worn a mask. But the temperature check is a big deal for us. So we have in the cafeteria this area called the Commons, where people also play racquetball. There's a rock climbing wall there, and student affairs is in there. But there's a facial recognition place where you just walk up, knows your face, records your temperature, records it to our app. So we have an app that you have to sign off and mention if you have any sort of conditions, if you've been exposed to anybody, if you've tested for COVID or haven't, and you can sign off every single day. So if you don't sign off on the app and you don't get your temperature taken, you can't engage in certain activities on campus. And so we have all that going on and masks full time. And so far, so good. I mean, lots of places around the country haven't been so lucky, but I don't think they've gone to the same extent as we have to make sure everyone knows we do the right things, we can pull this off. But a couple of people screw up, it could throw a monkey wrench in everything.
Yeah, so let's say COVID-19 gets under control and there's a vaccine. As a coach, as the coach of the team, and you travel in buses and vans and that sort of thing, would you still use that technology after that pandemic's done? Because, you know, if you have a kid that's got the flu, like in the early, like, you know, he does the facial recognition and, hey, your temperature's, you're like 99 something, I think that you should ride in a separate car.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. Like, to keep your, just on the broader thing, keeping your athletes from getting, spreading sickness to each other.
Yeah, no, even before all this happened, all of my athletes knew if they were sick that they weren't supposed to come in the building, period. So that's, I've always been the coach that says if you're sick, you shut down, you get healthy first, and you try not to spread it to others. But yeah, it's an interesting concept. I think I had a little bit of prep for this COVID thing at the 2016 Olympics as a coach, because the head coach then was fanatical about hand sanitizer and trying not to get sick. So I already had the pre-course for COVID before this even happened. I mean, seriously, he would hand out bottles of sanitizer to us and none of us got sick.
And this was in Rio. So you were at the Rio Olympics with the track team.
Before that, all the World Cups and doing all the stuff. I mean, we were on do not get sick. That's the number one way we're not going to perform. And so when this all went down, it was kind of like, oh, I've already taken the prerequisite for this course. I'm ready for this one.
Right. Right. So what the student athletes that you get, what are most of them looking to get out of it? Are they looking as a learning and maybe a stepping stone to keep racing, or is it something they just do for fun, or is it a whole spectrum of things?
It is a whole spectrum. We have a lot of people that are they're avid cyclists in one discipline or another, but exposing them to the other disciplines is probably the number one thing people like. Like, we have kids now that love mountain biking that don't have their own mountain bike. They use a school bike, and they're just totally into it now. They may have only done track or only done road. So vice versa. So we expose people to all these different disciplines, but also events. So we go to a lot of 6-hour mountain bike races where people aren't going to do it solo, so they do it as a team. And so we kind of make it fun too. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, well, isn't that the stereotype that you know, people talk about boomers and Gen Xers, like, oh, they like to compete and do endurance events and that kind of thing. But millennials, they just want to do like the color run and fun stuff. Yeah. So are you finding that that's actually true, or is that a myth?
I think that it's a myth. I mean, there is the participation trophy thing. There are too many categories, a lot of these events. I mean, they're giving awards to, hey, who didn't get an award? Put them on the podium, you know. What, your blue eyes and you're 5'8". Okay, you won that category. there's some of that, but realistically, what I'll do is we have a bunch of teams. I'll put people together to make sure that our teams are competitive with each other. And so they'll have that competitive nature to chase each other. So if we have four two-man teams in a 6-hour race, I'll try to make it so I don't even know who's going to win. And they'll get into it then. And they'll chase each other around the course for the entire time period. But even in training, we go out to Russell and we do our night rides in the winter. Everyone has their Strava route, and we leave the van, and it's whoever gets back to the van first wins. And we'll re-handicap it the next Wednesday. And, you know, doing this not only in the dark with lights on, but everyone doing different courses, and it's fun.
That sounds fun. That's cool.
Yeah, the competitive nature is there, but you have to. I think that those generations, the Zers and the Millennials, they don't know how to expose themselves to it. So we have to be the ones that create the opportunity, and then all of a sudden they buy in, and then it's game on.
They learn through that, and they figure it out. Yeah. You know, one thing that I'm figuring that this pandemic is doing is millennials and Zs, they have that stereotype of, you know, everything's, the world is sort of curated around them, and then they just have to navigate through it. But they have a lot of support. But, you know, with some of the distancing that's going on, they're having to figure things out and having to do it on their own. And, yep. You know, so that'll be kind of interesting, you know, just like as Gen X people. But anyways, do a lot of these kids have previous cycling experience? Are they green, or are they like, I've always wanted to come and you know?
It's a complete mix. I mean, we have Cat Ones in their various disciplines, and we have people that don't have their own bikes and they wanted to do something. We have a lot of, I won't mention the coach and I won't mention the sport, but we have a group of people that didn't stick with the sport that they came to Piedmont to do. Mm-hmm. And it translated well to cycling, and they stayed at Piedmont and they enjoyed cycling. And one of the girls that just graduated, she rides more now than she ever had when she was at school. So she's fallen in love with riding her bike. So we're also the life support system here. I mean, people want to be athletic, and there's no pressure here. A lot of the other sports, I mean, if you're not varsity, if you're not, you know, at a certain threshold, you don't get to play. Mm-hmm. It's like everyone gets to play, right? I mean, the Cat One and the absolute beginner, there's a category for you. So that's where we kind of have a benefit over other sports, is that, you know, there's no one on the sidelines. If you want to compete, we'll get you a plate or a number and go have at it.
Yeah.
Just don't, because they break too much stuff.
Oh, that's cool though, because, and then not only that, but you also have something that you can do well beyond your, you know, your collegiate years. What do you?
That's a big thing too. I mean, a lot of the other sports, I mean, some of the sports, you know, the running, and I mean, there are softball leagues and what have you after they graduate. But yeah, cycling is definitely something that, I mean, we're interacting with the community already, right? So today's Wednesday, so we have two rides. We have the A ride we call the Cornelia Marathon because it's a marathon distance where we're basically throwing down for 26 miles. But the Habersham High School group ride is the community ride. And so there'll be like 20, 30 people from the community that are not collegiate people that will send 5, 6, 7 of our collegiate riders over there to do that ride. Well, that's not happening, obviously, with our basketball team and our soccer teams are inviting the community to go to practice with them. So, So we have a lot of different aspects to integrate and be different than the other sports.
Those that have ridden and are coming to school, what are you finding that they're experienced in? Are they track riders, enduro, mountain bike, road racing? What's their?
We're getting more attention on mountain bike now because it's not so much the way we have more groomed trails next to us. It's just, I think the weather and just knowing more and more about Russell. I mean, Russell is, you know, the diamond that's, you know, hasn't formed yet. People just don't understand like what's in there because so many destination points are close to us that they never reach out to Russell, which is, you know, it's not easy out there, right? That's the one.
Right.
Not groomed trails, you know, severely machined trails, and it's not flat. So you have to have a certain skill level. But, you know, more of our incoming riders have been mountain bikers. We have, because of my background, we get a lot of road attention as well. But cross and gravel kind of skirt both of those. So we do a lot of gravel events, which is really great. We just did the Right Play Ramble a couple weeks ago, and three college kids were in the top 7 or 8 overall in the elite class, which was pretty cool.
Nice.
And only one were mine. You know, so I only had, my kid was 4th, but 2 other kids that are racing through these COVID times, you know, are out there. And but yeah, we're still fully supporting. Everyone else is pretty much on their own accord. But yeah, and we introduce people to track too. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing. Track is up about 1.5 hours from us. It's, you know, track bikes are cheap. It's a safe facility. You know, there's no cars. There's no, you know, fire hydrants to run into. So getting them on the track is an easy thing to do too. And that's the interesting thing is that you'll find a mountain biker who would never, ever think about riding the track. And now I get him on the track and he's like, oh, this is really cool. I want to do this.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And then, I mean, talk about that. It seems like a great opportunity to do all the different, at least get exposed to all the different aspects of cycling.
Yeah.
You know, especially have you as a resource. So like, hey, I've never, you just happen to be coached by one of the best track racers the U.S. has produced. So, you know, you might learn a few things.
That's the last twist to that is that a lot of these other coaches aren't riding at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to rip on them too bad, but yeah, you're not looking at people that are pinning a number on or haven't pinned a number on for a while. So, I often go out there with them in their category, and that's fun.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's got to be fun. What's the, as far as racing goes, what's the landscape that you're seeing now, you know, during the pandemic? I mean, there are some events going on.
There are very few USA cycling events going on. There are many non-sanctioned events going on. I think everyone's afraid of litigation or a breakout. I think that a lot of that fear-mongering is scared a lot of people. Obviously, there are a lot of people that are upset that anybody is competing right now. I would argue back saying, you know, there hasn't been one sign that these events have done anything. If Lowe's is allowed to be open, how can't we do mountain bike and gravel events? I mean, there's closer contact with people. Absolutely. I'll give that to people that's probably not, you can make that argument that you shouldn't have those, but mountain biking and gravel riding, I mean, it's more dangerous going to the grocery store, in my opinion. It's more dangerous than going going to the hardware store. The inconsistency of lockdown is what I think has inflamed everybody, is that how can this be open and how can that be closed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some real inconsistencies.
Yeah, and I think that if that didn't happen, you'd have less just hatred out there, right? I mean, it's when they're apples and apples, and there's different kinds of apples, but when they're comparable and one's you can eat that apple and the other one you can't, that becomes a problem. So I think that it's just teaching, from my aspect, teaching the kids that you have to give up some things. You have to, you know, wash your hands. You have to use the sanitizer. You have to wear your mask. You have to do the right things. And yeah, you know, when you guys are in the dorms and what have you, don't, you know, this is not a time period to socialize. That's mm-hmm. the one thing you have to give up. The close interaction, these parties, family get-togethers, those are the time periods where people are in real exposure and being indoors. I mean, the statistic now is, I'll try to find you a reference for it, but as an American today spends 90% of their life indoors. That's crazy. I mean, the average American, 90%
wow.
of their time. Yeah. And so that's what comes down to that vitamin D deficiency that people talk about with COVID, right? Mm-hmm. That's a big factor. So now get outside and exercise, be healthier.
Well, this is a good transition, maybe pulling out a little bit from specific to collegiate cycling in your role, but you're also a coach. Do you have any thoughts on, you know, with the rise the emergence of virtual training platforms, which typically are inside? How, I mean, is that a good surrogate for actually getting outside and training?
Well, I mean, the fancy term nowadays, you have anti-vaxxers, right? Everyone's talking about being, oh, that guy's an anti-vaxxer. Well, I'm an anti-Zwifter, right? I don't, you know, if I can ride my bike outside, I'm going to ride my bike outside. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a fine training tool. I think it's rather hilarious that they're trying to create a gaming aspect, right? Like all this other stuff that that's successful, where you're playing, you know, we joke around, call it Fortnite instead of, you know, Fortnite. And you have the Madden NFL, you know, players. I mean, those are skill. That's how fast you move your fingers or what's going on. I mean, it's clearly obvious, no matter what Zwift wants to put out there. It is not fair, okay? All power meters are not created equal. There are great bike riders getting destroyed by average bike riders on this platform. So to take it serious to say, hey, you know, this is a new competitive platform, I think it's a great platform for people that live in winter environments. I think it's a great training tool, people that have jobs, people that have kids, but to try to replace it for racing or try to make it a spectator sport is fairly laughable to me. It's like we love riding outside here. Our night mountain bike riding, chasing each other around, we're not going to switch that for Zwift.
Mm-hmm.
UGA, because they're not doing bike racing right now, decided to purchase their collegiate athletes Zwift memberships this fall. The problem with that is that's here in Georgia. It's like we don't have a winter. What do you need a Zwift membership for if you live in Georgia? Now,
say Minnesota or something.
If it was Boston College or something like that, yeah, it'd be one, hey, thanks a lot, because I don't want to ride in the snow, but...
What do you think people are missing? If Zwift is... And I get you're saying that Zwift isn't... You're not totally down on it, but it's a good training tool, but it needs to be a component of a larger experience. What do you think people are missing by not riding outside or even training with, you know, either training with a small group or a larger group?
you can see a Zwifter in a race pretty easy because he's got to stay in the saddle, because when he stands up or she stands up, donkey style takes over, right? And there's no balance there. The bike handling skill aspect has vanished, right? So not knowing where the wind is coming from, having poor technique out of the saddle, it's just different. But it's a component that people could use. Like, hey, there's no question, during the 2016 Olympics, we did a lot of watt bike work. During the summer, we're going to take the girls up to take them down to sea level and have them do some massive efforts on the ergo, right, on the watt bike. So there's a place for it, but it's not like if it was the best thing ever, they would just do that, right? And we'd never get on the track and never practice exchanges, never practice standing starts, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I just got my butt handed to me this last weekend in the mountain bike race because our kid that they kicked my butt, I mean, he handles his bike way better than me. I mean, he was going through the technical sections, no brakes, and you just heard mine screeching on the course, you know? And so that's the deal. It's like, I need to work on that. If I want to be competitive with him, I have to work on that concept. And that doesn't exist on Zwift. I mean, the drafting component and standing up and, you know, just, again, yeah. When Chloe Diger gets 26th or whatever she got in a stage at the virtual Joe Martin, it's just like, no. Sorry. There's a glitch in the matrix. That does not compute. So, and people make all these excuses that it was an uphill time trial, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no. It's like, I'm sorry. You know, it's been exposed that it's not a fair fight on Zwift. And it's fine. I mean, again, it's a component, and we have athletes on our team that do it once in a while. But, I mean, most of our athletes, when I say, hey, let's go out to the woods, they're not going to do Zwift instead.
Yeah. You know? They're like, no, I'm going to do – there's a group ride starting in Watopia in a couple minutes. I think I'm going to do that.
Yeah. Good. Here we go.
All right, so even a more general question. Are you a tall socks person, short socks person, or are you situational sock length?
I become more situational. I was an anti-tall sock guy for a very long time. But now in the woods, to protect from the bugs we have here and what have you, and warmth, in the winter time, even though it only gets in the 50s here, sometimes the 40s. But typically I've always asked people, like, when it's a hot summer day here in Georgia and it's 90 degrees and 90% humidity, it's like, yeah, so you cramped today, right? You cramped, and those socks are to your knees. Do you think that helped you or hurt you today, wearing black socks up to your knees today? And so that pretty much settles that argument right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, the biggest negativity that I would throw towards Lance Armstrong is long shorts and long socks. I mean, that was as bad as any of the doping went on.
Right, it's like the anti-knee warmer.
Yeah. That didn't help the appearance for our sport, and now we have all these mountain bikers that are anti lycra. You know, they gotta be racing around in baggy shorts and t-shirts, right? So that's also like, yeah, that's arrow. That's way faster. That's not gonna grab onto a tree or a branch or anything, right?
Or the nose of your saddle.
Yeah, a lot of the style has driven me a little crazy. I think that the pinnacle of our style of cyclists was probably the 90s. We've got away from the neon colors of the 80s, right? Right. And then we, you know, it was before, it was pre-Lance and the long socks and the long shorts and the pre-mountain bikers thinking that they are on spring break, right?
So you're not out there in your tank top, you know, tank top and baggies doing time trials.
I have pressure for us getting our new apparel in the near future to get some mountain bike tops. So I'll probably end up caving into the group and giving them something that they want.
All right. So it sounds like you're having a little. You're trying to carefully navigate the new equipment that's on offer. So if you had to choose, would you go hydration pack? Like a backpack, like a camelback, or a fanny pack?
Ooh.
To choose one. You have no water bottle mounts on your bike.
I tried the camelback for a lap this last weekend. I did not train with it enough, so it was bashing me in my lower back, so I had to throw it off.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I know that I got to strap that thing up high and tight, I think it'll be fine.
Okay.
Because of some of these mountain bike events, there's no way to reach down for a bottle anyway. I mean, we have courses. There was a course up. It was called Reclaimed, just south of Chattanooga. Amazing place. It's 3 hours away from here. We'll go there just to take the kids to a cool, fun place. But on that course, there was no place to grab a bottle. It was twisty. There was none. I mean, that was the perfect, like, hey, you better get a camelback because that, or you're going to have to stop and drink. Your choice. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And sometimes you can't carry enough. I mean, depending on how long the event is, there may not be enough water available in a bottle.
And that's going to be the problem in 2 weeks. Fool's Gold is a big, long puppy. If you want to be competitive, you can't stop at those stations. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, have you tried a fanny pack?
No, I have not tried the fanny
pack. Yeah, the fanny pack's pretty good.
All right. That's the other thing. I mean, all the new bags, all the new gravel bags on bikes are pretty interesting, too, like the handlebar bag and all this different stuff. Yeah. So,
yeah, it takes you back to your 80s. The 80s, like the handlebag between the your brakes on the drop bar bike.
Yep.
So is there anything, so another new thing or emerging thing are e-bikes and e-bike events. Does Collegiate do anything with e-bikes?
No, they haven't. And I am, that's another almost a Zwift subject with me is I think they're great for people that need them and great for people that aren't that fit. But we've run into problems with them in Aspen where you have a pretty fit male, probably in his early 30s, just terrorizing people on bike paths, right? I mean, dangerously, right? They can't go that fast on their own. You get on an e-bike, and all of a sudden, it's like, what's that guy doing? Yeah. So I think that we're not out of that hasn't been completely figured out yet, right? And that's the big thing is you've heard of some people having accidents because they're going faster than their ability can handle. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. But for certain, there are people in their, 60s, 70s, 80s that, they want to be able to ride with their friends and they can't anymore. I think that's great,
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And my mom was one of those people when my dad was still around. She had one of the first ones about 20 years ago. She had a battery pack, had a little button to push on her mountain bike and it, through the front hub, it gave her a berth, and that was she was able to stay with my dad on some shorter rides.
Yeah,
so it was good.
Yeah, and that's what it seems like. I just didn't know if on the collegiate level, if there was.
The bar keeps on getting lower to who's using these and who should. I mean, I've flagged multiple people on Strava segments. Saying, no, I can see that that's an e-bike. No. You're not getting the KOM on an e-bike. So I think that's the bigger issue is, how do you keep Strava real, right?
Yeah.
When you have people, I mean, maybe I get an e-bike and I can retake a lot of stuff that I shouldn't have any. So.
Right. Well, Jamie, I know you've got a short time today, but I do appreciate you spending the time on the podcast and talking about Piedmont cycling experience and that whole program. I think it's really cool what you're doing.
Thanks. I'm glad to catch up with you, and it's fun. We're hoping for a big incoming class this fall of 2021, And if everyone comes, I think it's going to come. It's going to be a very fun group. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be pushed to the max, trying to still be competitive with these kids.
Oh, that's great. That's ideal. All right.
They're going to push me out to pasture sooner than later, so it'll be fine. I've had a long run, so when it happens, I'm not going to complain.
I doubt you'll go quietly, though.
Yo, you have been listening to the podcast. Want more of the follow us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/podcast.